Join me in welcoming our speaker for tonight, Ken D. from La Mesa, California.
Hi, my name is Ken, and I'm an alcoholic. Good to be here in Portland on a Saturday night. This is just like the adults. We get to stay up and everything. This is fun. I want to thank Chris and whoever was involved in getting me invited here, and Dave for being such a great host, picking me up at the airport and making sure I get settled in. A lot of times you don't get a guy like Dave. You know, sometimes when you do this, you'd be surprised the people they send to pick you up. I mean, I've come out of the airport, and the guy said to me, do we go right or left? And I said, you know, hey, I just came 3,000 miles. I thought you might have a hint, you know? And from my background, it's always great to stand behind one of these and not have to enter a plea. There were seven people who introduced themselves as being new. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. If you come here on a regular basis and do the things that are suggested in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you'll find out you'll be coming up as one of the recipients getting time here. The nice part about Alcoholics Anonymous is, unlike other institutions, we count time up. You know, it's not like in 6 months I get out, you know, and 5 months I'm near the door, you know. So we actually count up, and if you don't know what this thing is about, there's a book called The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it is the owner's manual if you're an alcoholic. You know, anything you need to know is in this book. If it's not in this book, it's not AA. You know, a lot of times, a lot of good stuff, it sounds good, people talk about it as though it's real alcohol, and from the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, but it just isn't. You know, one of those things that I hear commonly is no sex in the first year. It's not in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, you keep the average alcoholic away from sex for a year, by the time they get back to it, they'll forget who gets tied up. So, you know, my experience with relationship in AA is that the quicker you can get into a relationship, the quicker you get into the steps. You know? So it's just the opposite. Get involved right away, you know. But before you get too involved, just remember, read Dr. Silkworth, because he'll tell you the gene pool. In Full Flight from Reality, Outright Mental Defectives, Delusional, Producers of Chaos, and Children of Confusion, you know? What are you doing Saturday, you know? So it's an interesting thing, you know? I go to weddings in AA where the only thing they have in common is neither one of them were raised by wolves. I mean, it's like, you know, you go and you look and you can't believe that you're there. And you're going, you know, but it all seems to work the way it's supposed to work. And that's the interesting thing, you know. If you be an alcoholic of my type, I'm a real alcoholic. I don't know what that means to you, but that means that I drank stuff that not only the spot, it removed it. You know, like, some people see the glass as half full. Some people see the glass as half empty. As an alcoholic, I always saw it as too small. So, you know, I got through school totally unscarred by education. So you're not going to hear anything really deep from me. That's for sure. You know, I got sober with guys. You say, there's a dead bird, we all look up. So, you know, like, teacher asked a buddy of mine, how do you spell Mississippi? And Vinny said, you mean the river or the state? You know? And those are the guys I hang out with today. You know, I took a guy into a bowling, into a trophy shop to get trophies for the bowling team, and he looks around and he goes, wow, this guy good. No, Donnie, he makes these. Oh, yeah, I knew that. You know? And you'll be part of these brilliant conversations where you'll hear two guys saying, you know, Tony, if your mother didn't have any children, there's a good chance you won't. You know? The other day it was, why is there a light on the vacuum? Don't be so stupid in case the power goes off. So it's like, you can hang out with these guys, and the thing they all have in common is they're sober. And they're sober because they read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and practice these principles and all their affairs. You know, those seven people who introduced themselves tonight as newcomers, I got here, my sobriety date is July 5th of 1970, and my mom said, boy, that's very appropriate. You did everything on a 5th. So, I'm from one of those large Irish Catholic families where we're divided into two groups. Either you're in AA or you need it. You know, there was, my mom used to say, the only time you kids said no to a drink is if you misunderstood the question. You know, like we, that's just the way we were. And the deal was, is when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, it was July 5th, as I said, I walked into a meeting in Brooklyn, and as I was walking in, the guy said, they always had greeters at the door at that time, and he said, newcomer. That was before I knew you were intuitive. And I think the thing tipped him off is I was wearing a blue wool suit, and I had a tie on, and everybody else was in shorts and sandals. They brought me in and they said, you know, if you want to get sober, the miracle takes place up front. And I was, oh, yeah, I'm here for the miracle. That's definitely. And I went to the guy with the guys after the meeting to the diner, and I was sitting at a table in the diner, and there was a guy who was to be my sponsor, and he was my sponsor till he passed away last year, my temporary sponsor for 35 years. I think he needed the work. So, and the deal was, here I was sitting with two plumbers, a priest, an FBI agent, and a lawyer. And I thought, well, this is what it's come down to. You know, this is, I'm really on a winning streak now, you know. I had been to the racetrack at Belmont a few days before that, and I bet on a great horse. It took 8 lessons to beat him. He ran so slow that the jockey was beating him, and the horse was actually looking at him like, why the hell are you hitting me? There's nobody behind us, you know, like, and now I was at this AA meeting. This guy who was to be my temporary sponsor for 35 years said, I'm going to be your sponsor. So my wife and kids had left and gone out of state for their own sanity, and I had gotten into a lot of jackpots before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I went through a phase in my life where I seemed to have a lot of legal problems because I was finding things before people officially lost them. And so when I got here, I had a lot on my plate. And this guy said to me, come on over to my house. And he kept me anchored real close to him because he knew I needed to be locked into somebody. And he was just the right sponsor for me. He was very simplistic, and what he said to me is, I'll never ask you to do anything I'm not doing myself. And if you want what I have, these are the things I do, you come along and do them with me. If you don't want to do that, then chances are you don't want what I have, and you should look for another sponsor. So I used to go over there, and he'd always make sure I had a good meal, and for the first 6 weeks I was there, I was doing everything you were supposed to do, I thought, and every time I went to a meeting, they would give me a red name tag with my name on it, Ken, and everybody seemed to know I was a newcomer. And so after about 2 months, it hit me. How do they know I'm a newcomer? So I looked around the room very carefully because you can't slip too much past me. And I noticed everybody had a blue name tag. So I went up to the secretary and I said, hey, yo, you know, how come I have a red name tag? Everybody else has a blue name tag. And he said, hey, you're ready for a blue one. And he gave me the blue one. We were all quick in my neighborhood. Everybody was quick, yeah. And so I was going to this guy's house, and he started me into these steps, and we took the steps just the way they are in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We didn't have any ancillary materials. We didn't do anything else. We just took it right out of the big book. And one of the things that happened to me is as I was taking the steps with him is that as I went through each step, I was being evicted from my hiding places. And I got to see who I really was. And I'd never taken a good look at who I really was. You know, the nice thing about being delusional is you don't have to deal with reality, you know. And I didn't mind doing drive-bys to reality, but I certainly didn't want to take up permanent residence. So I would have my own mindset, you know. I had my own mindset. In fact, in high school, I was court-ordered to a psychiatrist. And I remember sitting in the psychiatrist's office, and he's looking at me, and he said, so what are you thinking right now? And I gave him some answer, and he said, that's not what you're thinking. What are you thinking right now? And at that exact moment, what I was really thinking is, if my knees bent the other way, what would chairs look like? And I intuitively knew not to share that with him, you know? Because I figured I wouldn't have got out of there. So I had this stuff right from the beginning. Most kids, their parents walk into the room today and they're watching TV. They say, what? Turn off the TV and do something else. My mother would come in and I'd be thinking and she'd say, turn on that TV. She never wanted me to be left alone thinking because, I would have these great ideas. And I carried these ideas into AA as well, I might add. You know, at one time I was going to sell hearing aids over the telephone. So I thought it'd be a great telemarketing deal. So another time I thought I was going to sell ties that were starched like this so that even when you were sitting still, it looked like you were doing something. So, you know, so stuff that made sense in my head was a lot of times just had no play in the real world. You know, there's an old saying, when the tide of delusion goes out, you get to see who's been swimming naked. And I swam naked a lot, let me tell you. My best ideas are probably what got me here, and so some of my worst ideas. But I was with this guy, and he took me through the steps, and we were developing a really good rapport with one another. And after about 7 or 8 weeks, he said to me one night, we're going on a 12-step call. I said, good, 12-step call. And I knew as much about 12-step calls as I did a jar of Vicks, so I'm going, yeah, okay, we'll go on this 12-step call. So we got in the car and we went and we pulled up to a brownstone in Brooklyn. And, of course, there was no parking space. And he said to me, can you go and get this guy and bring him back here and we'll take him to a meeting? And I said, sure. He said, you can do that. I said, hey, my first job in AA myself, you know, I'll do this. So he let me out of the car. And as he tells the story, he came around the block. And as he came up, I had the guy on the ground, and I'm beating him with a garbage can lid. It seems that somewhere between the time this guy made the call and I got there, he had a second thought. And I found out later he was entitled to it, but But at the time, I figured this is the first thing they asked me to do, and I'm from a neighborhood where someone says, can you do it? And you say, I'm going to do it. You better do it. So, I grew up in one of those neighborhoods where you say, how far is it to the subway? We say, we don't know. No one's ever made it. You know what I mean? You know? He fell asleep in the trunk of a car. He deserved a shot. You know, like that. And so that was the mindset that we had, you know? So anyway, now, I don't want you to think I was abusive. It was no more than 3, 4, maybe 5 tops. And I think after the third one, in all honesty, looking back at it today, is he was close to surrender. I could see in his eyes that he was willing to turn his will and his life over to the care of me as he understood me. And he had a look like, I really am sorry you're here. And so my sponsor whistled me into the car like I was some kind of a canine. So I got in the car and we started down the avenue. He had a way of talking out of the side of his mouth, which lets you know that he was not too enthralled with you. And he said, I want you to do me 2 favors. I said, what's that? He said, first, don't ever consider that a 12-step call. And he said, secondly, don't tell anybody I'm your sponsor for a while. You know? Let's see how this thing goes, you know? And that's basically the way I got here. And you know, the reason I like to do these things is I love to hear people laugh. I really enjoy hearing people laugh, because in AA I think it's a great healing when you can laugh. And I know some things about laughter that most people don't know, and that is you cannot laugh and think at the same time. So every time you're laughing, you're getting a respite from yourself. And if you're sitting in one of these chairs, you need that break, let me tell you. You know, if there were a song in AA, it would be, "I am always on my mind, I am always on my mind." So you definitely need the break, that's for sure. The other thing I know about laughter, produces a lot of endorphins, and endorphins are very good for you. It helps you fight a whole lot of things in your body. And scientists have worked it out that next to sex, laughter produces the most endorphins. So that if you could have sex while you were laughing... which at my age begins with undressing. Then you are really on a health kick, you know, like to say the least. And the deal is that the other thing about laughter is that in order for something to be funny, your mind has to be tricked. When someone is telling you a joke, and that joke has a punchline to it, the reason the punchline is funny is because your mind, and my mind, is always jumping ahead. And it jumps to what it thinks would be the logical conclusion. And when the logical conclusion isn't the logical conclusion, it's something else, then it's really funny. Because your mind has been kind of screwed with. And if you're an alcoholic, you need that exercise also, you know. And the nice thing about it is that if you're laughing at the same joke two or three times, then there's other programs. You know, like... But laughter is very, very important, and that's why I love to hear people laugh. And there's a lot to be laughed at in life. You know, when you look around, I mean, I hear such unbelievable things at meeting. I actually hear people say things like, "Well, there's us, and then there are the normal people." Watch my lips. There are no normal people. There are just people who haven't shared with you. You know? If they shared with you, you'd say, "Hey, they're like us, you know?" The reason we think we're so out of the line is because we come to these meetings and we hear that stuff. You know, I've been behind people in the supermarket and I see what normal people buy. They buy things like mint-flavored dog biscuits. "Hey, I want my dog to have good breath. I'll put Lavoris in the toilet." You know, like, so the bottom line is that there are no normal people. There just are no normal people. The other thing is you want to remember that if it's perceptionally positive, you can live a really good life. It's most of the problems that alcoholics have and anybody else have start with the same three words: "I've been thinking." If you could cut that out of your vocabulary, you'd be in good shape. That's why in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's no chapter into thinking. You know, it's into action. You know? Thinking is what you do when you don't want to take action. "I've been thinking about it." Oh, yeah. Next time you got to go to the head, you just sit there and think about it. You know? We have people that clean up after the meeting. The deal is that people want to be nouns, and there are no nouns in life. There are only verbs. Everything is changing all the time. There's nothing staying the same. And the nice thing about being sober is that you come to realize that the only real security you get in life is when you begin to accept impermanence. Nothing is going to stay the same. If you're in a relationship with somebody, there's only three things that can happen. That person can die, that person can leave, or that person can change. That's it. That's the only three things. And if you can't accept that, then you better find a cave in yourself, because that's all they can do. And nothing is going to stay the same. Whether it's good now and you're looking for it to be good always, it's not going to be that way. If it's bad now and you think it's going to be bad always, it's not that way either. And the nice thing about life is you only have to do the now of it. You don't have to do the forever of it. You only have to do this little segment called the now. And you begin to realize that when Bill talked about God in his story, he said he wanted a God that had no time or limitation. He wanted a God that had no time or limitation. And if you're going to find a God in Alcoholics Anonymous, that's the God you want. You want a God of no time. We suffer, according to the big book, from a spiritual malady. And it says when that spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. For years, I didn't know what that spiritual malady was. I had thoughts, but I didn't know. And after about 20 years of sobriety, it came to me very clear what that spiritual malady was for me, and I think everybody else. And that is, we try to live in other than this moment. We try to live either looking back or looking ahead. We're not anchored in this moment. And by not being anchored in this moment, we miss out on our opportunity to be with God. Because this book says, God is always in the moment. In fact, it says, there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him Thursday. So it's always about being in the moment. And the other thing is that people don't want to surrender things to God because they're afraid they may not get the results they want. So they'll say things to you like, Ken, if I keep turning my will and my life over to the care of God, I am going to end up like the hole in the donut. Watch my lips again. We are the hole in the donut. And thank God we are the hole in the donut, because donuts come and go, but the hole is always there. And the hole is what connects us to the infinite. The hole is what makes us part of everything else. And after a while, you'll realize that hole isn't spelled H-O-L-E, it's spelled W-H-O-L-E. We're part of everything, and everything is part of us. You can only be who you are, you know. A guy told me early on in sobriety, he says, be what you is and not what you ain't. Because if you is what you ain't what you is. And I thought, if somebody had told me that in parochial school, I would have avoided a lot of problems, you know. It was so clear and so simple, you know. If you wake up in the morning and you're a daffodil and you want to be a rose, you're in for a long day. Like, it just doesn't happen that way. And after a while, if you be an alcoholic of my type, you notice that you can stop scratching stuff that don't itch. You know, like it, you know, you don't have to create stuff all the time to work on. You can just actually leave life alone and find out it works best when it's left alone. I mean, I go to meetings, and I've known some people now 30, 35 years at the same meeting, and they talk about the exact same thing. And it's like watching somebody milk a mouse, you know? A lot of activity, but very little milk, you know? And it's not until you let that stuff go that you got a chance to get on with life, you know? And in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, this book was written by guys who were very, very simple. And it doesn't make any difference how bad off you are when you get here. If you follow this program, your life is going to improve. I mean, I got here, as I said, in July of 70. Bill Wilson died January of 71, which meant I was about 6 months sober. And at 6 months sober, I was living in New York, and when he died, they broke his anonymity in the paper. The New York Times and so forth carried headlines, Bill Wilson, co-founder of AA, dead. And it was a big thing because it had already been cleared by General Service and everything else that his anonymity was going to be broken. And I was of the mind that I called my sponsor and I said, you know, it looks like this thing might work for me, and now the owner died. So I guess it's over. And he said, no, he said, they're going to try to keep the meetings open for a while, so keep showing up, Sparky. You know? And so that's just where I was mentally. And the nice thing about it is that when I got here, I realized, and listened to people talk and share their stories, that mine were different places, different times, but the events were pretty much the same. I met and married a very, very normal girl. Normal, whatever that is. And well, that lasted for a while. And the deal was, is she would say things to me like, That's your second drink. And I would say, honey, why don't you just forget about me and go ahead and finish your breakfast? You know, like... And you could never engage her in a good argument because she was based in logic and I was based in delusion. I came home on the subway one day and the New York stock market had taken its biggest downturn, and when I hit the door, I said, I got to have a shooter. And she said, well, I said, the market took its biggest downturn ever in my lifetime. And she said, we don't own any stock. How can you talk to somebody like that? You know, what can you say, you know? You just say to yourself, well, that's just the way she is, you know? And the thing is that what I realized is that it didn't matter what was going on with anybody else. What was really going on was what was going on with me. You know, when I used to talk to my sponsor, he was a guy who could focus you in the moment. I'd call him and say things like, well, my wife is gone. And he'd say, good, she deserves a break, you know. And I can't see my kids. Good, about time they caught some luck, you know. And then he'd listen to me for 2 or 3 minutes, never any more than that. And then he'd say, hey, Ken, maybe you'll get lucky tonight and die. And he'd hang up. And that opened up a whole new door for the evening, you know. Like, and I don't know about you folks, but my problems always started with I've been thinking, because I could just get something in my mind and massage it to the point where it just became so very, very overwhelming, very overwhelming. And then what I realized one day, and it was in AA, and I was sober a while, I don't know how long, and it hit me that I cannot do anything about those things I can't do anything about. And I said, wow. You know, this is heavy, you know. And then it began to hit me other things, is that, you know, I don't have to scratch stuff that don't itch. I don't have to swing at every pitch. I can some go by. I don't have to get involved in every conversation, you know, and I can actually let things just happen instead of always making them happen. You know, I used to drink in a bar in Brooklyn. And when I got to AA, they used to say, this is a twofold disease, whiskey glasses and women's asses. And I used to drink in a bar, and that bar had written on the glass in back of the bar there, it said, if you didn't bring it in, please, please don't touch it. We notice that's how all the trouble starts. And so when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm glad that people weren't telling me stuff that wasn't in this big book. You know, I'm glad that they weren't telling me that stuff. They were telling me to read the big book, and what if it was in the big book, it was something that had some application to my life. I may not understand that application in the moment, but if I keep reading it, what will happen is it will resonate with me as being truth, and then it will be able to do something for me when I experience that truth. You know, some people think the truth will set you free. The truth will not set you free. It will only set you free if it's your truth. It has to be ingrained in you to be your experience. Otherwise, it's just a bunch of words. This is just a bunch of words to people until they actually start to put together days of sobriety. 10 days, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. It's very hard to refute the fact that this is working for you when you see it working for you. You know, 20 years, 25 years, you know, you just say, wow, this is good stuff. And the nice part about it is most people don't know anything at all about themselves. And anytime a newcomer says to me, I don't know about you, but again, I try to give you a flavor for the people I work with. You know, they're not the brightest bulb in the room. You know, most of the guys I work with are out there where the buses don't run. And so, you know, you don't want to be laying down some real heavy stuff on them, because they'll look at you like, and they begin to question your ancestry. So the deal is you try to keep those guys focused on reality. And the easiest way to do that is with a visual. I don't know about you guys, but I use visuals, because people who count their sobriety like this, they need some visuals, you know? They don't need a lot of words. So I'll do this with you, and you can try it with your new people who are having trouble with God and understanding God. Okay. Everybody in here has a strong hand. Which is your strongest hand, your right hand or your left hand? If you were going to open a bottle of ketchup or something and you needed extra strength, which hand would you use? How many would use their right hand? Okay, good. How many would use their left hand? Okay, good. All right, now what I want you to do is, this is the ultimate test. Put your hands together and push as hard as you can. Now, you know all about your hands. You know where they've been, what they've done. This is not a fifth step. Just push. Push as hard as you can and tell me which hand wins. And you know what? If you're normal, neither hand wins. And you know why that is? Because the power to change is being met by an equal power not to change. And it's all coming from here. If I had the ability to overcome myself, I wouldn't need you guys and I wouldn't need AA. I would just simply say, hey, alcohol interfered with my life and I'm going to stop drinking, and that's it. I'd walk away. And I'd be in San Diego tonight where it's about 82 degrees. But that's not the way it works. And so what we teach people in Alcoholics Anonymous, if we're smart and we're good sponsors, is, you know, relax those hands and ask for that power to come into your life. And what you'll notice as that power comes into your life more and more, and you realize that there is one who has all power, and that one is God, and God is in the now, then you'd be able to get these guys who are out there where the buses don't run and say, okay, take that word now and spell it backwards. So instead of it being N-O-W, make it W-O-N. You've won. Once you've learned to live in the now, you've won. This is where life is lived. It's lived in the now. That's why God is referred to in the big book as the what? The great reality. Deep down inside every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. The great reality. Everything else is just delusional and toys. You know, it's out there going, yeah. But can, yeah, I know. Your situation is very different. We know that. And you have to let people know. You know, sometimes people say, you know, I think they're laughing at us. And I say, hey, you know, let's clear that up. We are laughing at you, you know. And we're not laughing at your problems, we're laughing at your solutions. Did you ever notice that the logo for AA should be excess is not enough? You know? Whatever the solution is, it means more. I gotta have more. You know, about 4 years ago, Chris said, at dinner tonight, he said, didn't you go and live in New Mexico for a while? And about 4 years ago, I had decided, now I don't suggest this for everybody, but I was about 31 years sober, and I just gave away everything I owned and got my life down to six Xerox boxes. And I put them in the back of my SUV, and I moved over to New Mexico, and I lived on an Indian reservation with the Navajo for 9 months. Now, again, I don't recommend that for newcomers. Would be okay because they don't have anything to give up. So, but my family had a thing, and they decided, they said, we think you've lost your mind. And I thanked them for the compliment, and I said, not yet, but I'm really working on it, you know. And the deal is that I've learned a bunch of stuff living over there with the Navajo, and that is, first of all, if you do a rain dance long enough, you'll get rain. This is heavy stuff for a kid coming from Brooklyn. The other thing I realized is there was only the first Thanksgiving. You never hear of the second Thanksgiving. And the reason for that is that the Indians thought it was a going away party. They didn't know we were going to stay. They thought, hey, they'll get a couple of turkeys, get back on the boat, we'll wave goodbye, and that'll be the end of these guys. So, you know, they were. And the other thing I found out is that the word which we use in California a lot now, people use the word vegetarian. Vegetarian is an Indian word. It means really bad hunter. So, and the only part of the big book they have trouble with is the part that says you can have no reservation. So, but outside of that, they're doing the deal over there. And I have a friend who just came back from, he's Persian, and he just came back from Iran, and now they have AA in Iran. And the nice part about it is they hold the meeting in the mosque. And women who aren't allowed to go into the mosque to pray go into the mosque to have AA meetings. And they just had an Iranian convention where there were 6,000 Iranians in Tehran at a convention. And it was held in a mosque. So when the truth is the truth, it resonates everywhere. And the nice thing about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is this book is made up of a bunch of simple spiritual truths that if you incorporate them into your life, then your life can get on and you start to live happy, joyous, and free. And if you don't incorporate them into your life, if you're just going to do some of them and not others, then you're going to find out that you don't get a whole lot. And you find out along the way that things just happen because that's the way they happen. I found out recently, for example, that if you looked at a railroad track, the rails on a railroad track are 4 feet, 8.5 inches apart. 4 feet, 8.5 inches apart. And you say, why would there be such an odd figure as 4 feet, 8.5 inches? Simple reason. The wagons that preceded the railroads were 4 feet, 8.5 inches. And the carts that preceded the wagons were 4 feet, 8.5 inches. And you go all the way back to the Roman days when the Romans had chariots and they were conquering Europe, and the chariots were 4 feet, 8.5 inches. Now here's the kicker. The reason they were 4 feet, 8.5 inches is because that was the approximate distance of two imperial horses' asses. So for 3,000 years now, two horses' asses have been determining modern transportation. And if you watch the spaceship that went to Mars, the last shooting, you'll notice on the side there was secondary booster rockets, those things on the side. Guess how big they are, folks? Anybody have a guess? 4 feet, 8.5 inches. The reason being is they were assembled in Utah and had to be shipped to the Cape through a tunnel on a railroad, which was 4 feet, 8.5 inches. So next time someone says, I think you're a horse's ass, say, yeah, but I'm controlling a lot of your life. You know, the deal is that in this world that we live in, there's a lot of distraction. And what I have found out for me, and that's what I can speak about tonight, is that once I got grounded in reality, I noticed that God wasn't so foreign to me. Now, I've never had burning bushes or anything else, but what I have had is the experience of God at a given moment, knowing that everything is all right when all the evidence is telling me it's not all right. But yet, internally, knowing it's all right. You know, and that's why I like to be around kids, because kids have this mastered. You know, I said to a kid in an elevator one time, why are you scratching your head? And he looked at me and he said, because I'm the only one knows it itches. You know? See, adults don't think like that. They'd be telling you all about a rash and infection and they tried this and that. And I don't know if any of you came to the international convention down in San Diego in 95, but it was held in Seaport Village. And in Seaport Village, the kids down there fly kites. And we have a lot of days where there's low clouds. And you'll go by and you'll see these kids flying their kites, but you can't see the kite. And I went up to this 10-year-old. I love talking to kids because they know what's going on. And I said, how do you know your kite is still there? And he looked at me and he said, because I can feel the pull of it, mister. And that's the way life has worked for me. I can feel the pull of it. I can't explain it to you. I can't define it. I can't write about it. But I have felt the pull of it. And when I'm doing God's will, I feel the pull of that. And when I'm not doing God's will, I felt the pull of that also. And the idea here is, very simply for me, it's to take every day of your life and live it to the max, because you don't know when you're going to cash your ticket in. You know, I went for a physical a couple of years ago, and I got flying colors, and I passed that physical. And 6 months later, I passed out, and I ended up in the hospital in the emergency room. And it turns out that I was bleeding internally. And so they said, okay, we'll take care of that, not a big deal. But while they were taking care of that, they ran some tests, and they said, that's not your problem. Your problem is that you have three arteries that are 95% blocked. So I had a triple bypass. So I went in there, and I had to wait several days till they got the hemorrhaging before I did the surgery. And all I remember is the doctor saying to me, if you start to hemorrhage, there's nothing we can do for you. So you're rolling the dice here. And I said, Doc, I personally know the guy who makes these decisions. I'm okay, you know. And so we went ahead with it. And after the surgery, he came in my room and he said, are your parents still alive, Ken? And I said, no, they're not. He said, neither one? I said, no. I said, why? He said, I sure would like to meet them. I said, why is that? He said, you have the most interesting family I've ever seen. He said, your brothers and sisters are black and white and brown and, you know, some of them don't even speak the language. And he said, they're not always the brightest bulbs in the room. And he said, but they just were coming through here in large numbers. And you see, I have a family no matter where I go. I have the family of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm connected to you and you're connected to me. And whether you like that or not, that's just the way it is. And I have that whole WHOLE because I've come to recognize that everything in life is just the way it's supposed to be, even though I don't see it that way. Because if it was meant to be different, it would be different. And I know that, you know, through each and every one of us, God is trying to become something he's never been before. And our job is not to impede him. And it's not to be like someone else, it's to be who you are. You know, and to just follow the simple direction. I had one of the best experiences of my life about 4 years ago. I rented a car in Rhode Island, and I was driving. I landed in Providence, and I was driving out to the Cape, and it had snowed, and the car got all full of snow, so I took it through a car wash, and I had used that global positioning system. So I had to make a turn that put me in the wrong direction after I got the car wash from what I had set it for. And this voice came on and said, please follow directions. And I pulled over and I said, now you give me this. You know, and had I had a voice like that all my life, it would have been so easy. You know, like there's a voice saying, please follow directions. You know, that would have been so simple. You know, I don't know about you guys, but I needed a sponsor when I was in elementary school. You know, I needed somebody probably in kindergarten. I would have loved to have someone to call and have them say, Ken, you know, eat the cookies, take the nap, you know. I would have loved that reassurance, you know. I really would have loved it. And what I've learned hanging out with the guys I hang out with is that it's all about perception. And if you have positive perception, then that perception becomes your reality. You know, it's like the guy who said, hey, you know, my wife has cut me down to sex once a month, but I'm not even upset because some guys she's cut out altogether. So, you know, it's that mindset that no matter what's going on, it's good. You know, it's good. Instead of getting caught up in stuff. And I know today that my life is a very simple thing, and that each day I have is to be used in whatever service I can do. Somebody had asked me earlier, they said, do you really enjoy going out and speaking all the time? And I said, yeah, I enjoy it. But if no one ever asks me to speak anywhere ever again, I'm the very best thing you can be in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that is I'm a sober member. You know, there just isn't anything else better than that. I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And inside of me, I'm comfortable all the time. There are times I get a little whacked like everybody else, but it's not very long. And I can tell you some things that I've learned, and they're just basic truths. And that is, you know, you can only lose what you do not have. You cannot lose what you have. So if you're worried about losing something, it's probably not yours. You can only lose what you do not have. And the nice part about this is you get really comfortable because what I have is internalized now. You know, I've had the same things go on in my life that you folks have had. I've had people die. I had a brother and sister die a week apart. My sister died Christmas Day. My brother died a week later, New Year's Day, a few years back. And then my mom died a few months after that because she didn't expect to see her kids do that before her. I had a son die. And that son, he came home to me, and he was in full-blown AIDS. And he came home to me in June. And the day after Labor Day, he was dead. And I got to be with him. And I got to be part of everything that he did. And I got to be there right at the end for him and hold his hand. And I know God has a great sense of humor because my ex-wife started coming to my house. I got to meet my husband-in-law, you know. And I realized that this is a day-at-a-time deal. And that nobody has a lock on anything. You know, it's a day at a time deal. And I've learned to accept that in all areas of my life. I don't know about you guys, but I've been around a lot of people who have died. I go to a meeting now where my home group meeting, there's a group of us that sit in this little alcove, and there's about 25 or 30 of us, and I have the least sobriety, and I got 35 years. And the rest of these guys have a long time. And we used to be called the Serenity Section. Now we're called the Intensive Care. So, because somebody's always in the hospital. And one of the guys that hung out with us until he passed away was this guy, Lewis. And Lewis was one of my big heroes in AA. He kept life so, so simple. You know, he had the simplest solutions. He worked at the county jail mopping the floors until he was 50. And then he got sober at 50. And he lived to be 89, so he was 39 years sober when he died. And Lewis was one of these guys where just to be around him was entertaining. You know, he used to smoke stogie cigars, and he had one red suspender that was connected to his flood pants, and he wore work boots all the time. And he used to say, "My name is Lewis, and I come here because I want to stay sober." And if he didn't like what you were saying at the meeting, he'd read the Reader's Digest. You know? He just carried the current Reader's Digest with him. And in there's a thing called word power or something. And so he'd be in the back, and he'd be looking up these answers. And you'd always get a newcomer, somebody with 5, 10, 15 years, come over to him. And they'd say, "Lewis, that's not the way you're supposed to do that. The way that works is you're supposed to look at the word, and then there's like 4 or 5 choices. You pick one of those. And then you guess at all these words, and then when you're done guessing, you turn to the back, and then you look." And Lewis looked at him and said, "Why would I guess if I know where the answer is?" "What's the matter with you, boy?" And one day they were talking about making a decision, and people were getting up, and I'm sure you've been at those meetings where the only way they could say less is if they talk longer. And they were talking about, "I'm in inventory, I called sponsor, I've been on 17 retreats, I'm talking to my therapist." And Lewis got up there and he said, "When I have a decision to make," he reached in his pocket and he pulled out $0.50 and he said, "I flip it. Heads, I do it this way, tails, I do it that way." He said, "I'm 38 years sober, I can live with it either way." And then you go sit down and the newcomers be like, "Wow. All right, Lewis," you know? And I always used to tell a story to Lewis that he always laughed at over and over and over again, because I had seen this movie, and you probably may have seen it too. It was Peter Sellers. And it was the difference between getting information and getting an answer. And he says to the guy, "Does your dog bite?" And the guy says, "No, my dog does not bite." And he reaches over to pet the dog, and he gets bit. And he said, "I thought your dog did not bite." And the guy said, "That is not my dog, you know?" And so a lot of times if you're alcoholic, you can proceed with thinking you have information when you have, "No, that is not my dog," you know? And so the deal is don't take this thing so seriously. And as it says in the big book, if you do this for a while, what will happen to you is you'll begin to realize you've touched an inner resource. There's an inner resource deep down inside of you. You don't have to find anything. You just have to become conscious. We're awake, and all we got to do is start to, you know, sleep, and all we got to do is wake up. And that's why the book uses words like, as you become conscious of his presence, you'll lose your fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. You'll be reborn. Burn into the consciousness of this man that all he has to do is clean house and trust God. The consciousness of your belief will see you through the doubts of the day. And if you don't know really what to do, I mean, if you're working with these sparkies that, you know, like, well, anyway, that think that Moby Dick is a venereal disease, you know, like, then what you want to do is take them through the day. Just have them go through. If you owe an amends, you want to do it because, you know, if you have to eat crow, you want to eat it while it's hot. So do it the very next day. And if that day was okay, then just let it go. And then there's the next part. Very deceptive language. It says, upon awakening. Now, when do you think that would be? When the alarm goes off. Hey, you know, these guys are quick, you know. And so and sometimes you look and you say, the hamster's dead, but the wheel is still turning, you know, like, you know. And the deal is you say, okay, upon awakening, now what do you ask God for? You ask God for an intuitive thought or a decision, something you don't have to think about. And then you get on with the day. And then it says, when agitated, not if agitated, but when agitated during the day, you ask for his guidance. And many times during the day, you ask him, you know, your will be done. Many times. Many, 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 many times during the day. And the deal is if you have your day planned out all the time, it's very hard for God to inject his will into your life. If you have a legal pad with 50 things to get done before 3:30, then there's very little room in there for God to get in. So you have to stop during the day and just allow God to talk to you. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to have a big conversation, but you just allow the opportunity. Just stop what you're doing for a while. Stopping is a good thing. Doing absolutely nothing is a good thing. Doing industrial amounts of nothing is terrific. You know, you can get really good at doing nothing. You know, you'll start out and just have like half a day where you just do nothing. But you can build on that. You know, you can really build on it. And what you're going to find out is that those days that you just allow to go by, you know, are not doing everything every moment, you're going to feel like they're the best days of your life. The best days of your life are going to be the simplest days of your life. And as you put those days together, as the book says, you'll begin to become conscious of his presence. It's not like God has to be found. He just has to be recognized as being there. And by doing that, then life gets really, really simple. And don't worry about the big stuff. And be careful with the directions you follow. I mean, I still follow directions. In this book, it says into action. So I still listen to people. A couple of months ago, a guy said to me, Ken, you don't know anything about sex until you do it in front of a mirror. I tried it. I damn near wrecked the car, you know? And the thing that threw me off were those side view mirrors. It said, objects may appear larger than they really are, you know? So the deal is that you got to be careful who you listen to. And you have to allow time in the day to do, as I said, nothing. And as you do that and you get to laugh a lot, what will happen is, if you want to create a habit, you have to repeat an act. And if you want to get good at Alcoholics Anonymous, you have to do the things that it suggested. One of the things we talk about here is to get spiritual. And if you take the word spiritual and you look inside of it, you'll see the word ritual, R-I-T-U-A-L. And that's what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. We have a ritual, and the ritual is hopefully to stop being selfish and self-centered and actually start to think of the best interest of somebody else. You know, and actually start to do this for people without looking for an award or a cup or something. You know, just doing something, in most cases, hopefully unnoticed. And what will happen is, as you do these things, you'll get more and more involved in God's presence because you're now doing for God's kids. You know, sooner or later, somebody is going to figure out that if you're a Muslim, you believe in one God. If you're a Christian, you believe in one God. If you're Judaism, you believe in one God. If you're Navajo, a Native American, you believe in one God. We all came from the same home office. We were all sent out from the home office just fine. But along the way, we forgot who we were and we made up somebody. And the person we made up, we couldn't sustain because that person wasn't real. It wasn't really us. And now when you go through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, what happens is you get a chance to jettison that person, that make-believe person, and you become who you really are. And as you become who you really are, you take on comfort that you've never known before. You know, life is a breeze when you're doing as you please. You know, it gets to be really, really nice here because you don't have to figure it out. And you don't have to be involved in arguments with people who are kind of idiotic. You never want to argue with a fool because onlookers can't tell who's who. So, you know, to be alive. You have to take these steps, and as you take these steps, you kill the person who couldn't stay sober. And as you kill that person who couldn't stay sober, you'll find the true self, and the true self is something that you can live with very comfortably. Now, you'll have days where it'll be a little out of sorts, but it won't be a big deal. And you'll get to laugh at a lot of things. I mean, I see things now that I laugh at that I didn't find funny before, you know? I was behind a truck not too long ago, and it had a bumper sticker on it, and it said, "Which way did they go?" And then it said, "How many are there?" It says, "How fast are they moving?" And then it says, "I must find them. I am their leader." You know, that's the kind of stuff in AA. You know, that's the kind of stuff in AA. You get to a point where you just realize that everything is happening just the way it's supposed to, and we don't have to be doing anything more than we're already doing. You know, I really enjoy coming here tonight. I don't know where else I'd want to be except right here in Portland with you guys. And the deal is in most cases, I'll never see you again, in most cases. But I was here, and you were here, and we had a meeting. And at that meeting, we got to see seven people stand up and introduce themselves as newcomers with less than 30 days. And we saw a group of other people take tokens, so we know this works. And we maybe had a little laugh or two. But more importantly is, for this time, we didn't take a drink and we didn't hurt anybody. And boy, that's an accomplishment. You know, that's an accomplishment. So don't try to figure it out. You know, you got one piece of the puzzle. You're not the box. You know, don't try to put it all together. You know, just keep your little piece handy. We may need it sometime. So... And don't get caught up with thinking you've got to fit out. You don't have to figure it out. That's the joke. The joke here is there's nothing to be figured out. You know, because you're looking for things in a logical way, but it's your own logic. You know? If you're a real alcoholic, you're trying to escape from a reality you're not in. You know? Most of what you're doing is the equivalent of housekeeping in a dream. You know, like it does absolutely nothing. You know, you say to yourself, "What did I do yesterday?" It's a terrible day. I worked all day. You know, me and the lazy boy just stayed together the whole day, but boy, I'm exhausted. But this is not a logical world. If this was a logical world, men would ride side saddle. And we don't. We just don't. So just relax. And remember, you don't always have to have the best idea. In fact, you don't have to have any idea. And remember, things are not always as they appear, you know. The old guys, the old timers used to tell the story of the man with no arms or legs, and he showed up at the house of ill repute. And the madam answered the door, and she said, "Just what do you think you're going to do here?" And he looked her in the eye, he said, "I rang the bell, didn't I?" So when you're working with a newcomer, regardless of how they look, you could have a bell ringer, you know. Don't give up on that person too fast, you know. They're going to sound a little different, just like you did when you first got here. You know, they're going to be saying things and thinking things and challenging on things. And the nice thing is you're going to be able to keep them busy and give them the baby food of AA. The baby food of AA is the service. And while you're giving them the baby food, you're allowing them to grow in strength so they can get to what's really real, and that's God. And they can't do that maybe the first day or the second day or the first year. But you, by giving them the baby food, you keep them sustained until they're able to absorb what they really need. And once they absorb it, they now have it inside, and it's theirs, you know. Socrates said it best when he said about truth, what is, and what is not. Our job here is not to get anyone sober. It's to show them how we stay sober and basically put them in a position where they actually want what we have. And if you read in this book, with working with others, it will tell you the four nevers you never want to do, and that is you never want to criticize another alcoholic. You never want to force yourself on another alcoholic. And you never want to talk down to them as though you're on some spiritual or moral hilltop. And you never, never, never want to abandon your responsibility to. We'll develop a new energy. We won't tire so easily because we won't be using ourselves up in nonsense. So I want to thank you for letting me come here tonight, and hope you take really good care of one another because we're only on loan. And a buddy of mine used to come in and out of my house. He was a Hindu. And whenever he came into my house, he would say to me, Namaste, Ken. And when he left, he would say, Namaste. And Namaste, loosely translated, means the God in me sees the God in you. And as long as the God in me sees the God in you and the God in you sees the God in me, we will never do any harm to one another. We may disagree. We may not like certain things, but we won't do any harm to one another. So please, please, look to your right, look to your left, and remember, you are responsible. God bless you.